they're speakers, authors, and real-life rock stars, bringing you life-changing thoughts that rock, taking conversation all the way to 11.
Most shows only go to 10.
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? These go to 11.
This is Thoughts That Rock. Now, here are your hosts, Jim Knight and Brant Menswear.
I whip my hair. I whip my hair.
What?
I whip my hair. Just whip it, whip it, whip it, whip it,
whip it. Whip it real good.
I whip my hair.
Hop up out of bed, throw my swag on. No attention to them haters, cause I rip them off. We ain't doing nothing wrong, so don't tell me nothing. Just trying to have fun, keep the party jumping, jumping. What?
What
up?
What?
What?
What
up?
What?
Whip, 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 whip. I whip my hair,
whip my hair,
I whip my hair,
whip my hair,
whip my hair, whip my hair,
whip my hair, whip my hair, whip my hair.
What's going on?
Just
we're,
oh my god,
we're in the video of us right now.
Jim just had a seizure. Oh my gosh.
I wish I would have videotaped that.
Oh god, you're making me sweat. I should be sweating doing a podcast.
Believe it or not, there's a reason why we picked that song.
Oh.
Our guest today is lives in the land of hair. Oh my gosh, welcome everybody. Thank you so much for indulging us and joining us on Thoughts That Rock. It is the podcast that is about exchanging two pieces of life-changing advice. We try and squeeze that into about 30 minutes or so.
Okay, people.
Don't whip my hair.
This podcast is brought to you by Bookie Call.
Bookie Call?
Bookie Call is a free app that is an innovative book discovery platform.
Love it.
You sign up, you tell it the types of books you like, and it recommends books for you to read. In fact, it even sends you Bookie Calls in the middle of the night.
What is that?
So you can book up with your favorite books that you don't even know yet.
I get it.
You get it now? Book ups.
I like that. I like that.
It's safer.
Than what?
Than hooking up.
I got you.
Booking up, worst case scenario, paper cut.
Best case scenario?
Knowledge.
So what you're saying is people suck.
Data book.
I got you. Listen, if you like the show, do us a favor. Go online. I say online, wherever you can put a rating and a review. Probably have to do that on your podcast platform. But giving us a review, like a few written words, it could be any word, something like awesome, amazing, fantastic,
fabuloso.
I'm sorry, fabuloso.
Oh, wait, that's the cleaner.
Yeah, that's something else.
It's purple.
Give us a rating, a 5-star rating and a review. That would help us a lot because, believe it or not, it matters. People see those ratings. They want to check it out. We get more people. That generates more money.
We
can give it away.
We give it to Cannonball Kids Cancer.
Because they deserve it.
They do.
Tell us about Cannonball Kids Cancer.
Listen, they do amazing work. They fund cutting-edge research that nobody else funds to start trials for children who've been told there are no more options.
Yeah.
So we're in the business of creating options, and so should you. So go to cannonballkidscancer.org and figure out how you can get involved.
Yeah. Listen, we know how busy you are, too, and grabbing just a moment, a little window of time to break away and, you know, amp up your life, make it just a little bit better, level up, the kids like to say these days. It's tough, but you can do it.
You can.
And it doesn't really matter what you're doing.
You can
be listening to the show, but I bet you're doing something else.
Like what?
Right now.
Like
I don't
what?
Know. You could be, I don't know, on a long flight home from Tucson.
Put your mask on.
Maybe you're siphoning gas from an abandoned Pinto, like on The Walking Dead. Maybe you're sharpening your knife set. Does not matter to us. We just want to be the half hour that you've been waiting for.
Hey, you know what?
This whole week.
Shake them off.
Let's do this. Rock on.
Our guest today is our good friend, Mentor Dial, who is an international professional speaker.
Mm-hmm.
He's an elevator. I love that term. Mm-hmm. He's an entrepreneur and a multiple award-winning author. He really specializes in leadership and branding and transformation. We talk about Mentor quite a bit. He truly is one of the most interesting people that we know.
Truth.
First off, Mentor, welcome to Thoughts That Rock.
Jim and Brent, you guys rock.
Listen, you know you're one of our favorites, man. He's ever since we've met him, we have realized that we live boring lives.
Extremely. Extremely.
No, yes. You don't. You guys are awesome. I get inspired by you guys.
Well, that's kind, but when you look at Mentor's bio in the show notes,
stop the comparisons. You know, tell people a little bit about. Just go over some of the highlights.
Yeah, we won't do the whole thing. First off, he was 16 years as a top executive at L'Oreal.
Where?
L'Oreal.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, giant. You're not worth it.
Exactly. That giant billion-dollar brand.
Well, you don't pay attention to your hair.
Oh, that's true.
You know, he was part of the executive committee for the professional products division there. Also, before that, he was the global managing director for Redken. You also?
Oh, Redken?
Yeah, you know. Okay. He's a prolific writer with four books. We'll have all of those, obviously, listed. But really, his latest book on leadership is the one that we know because, to be transparent here, we were very lucky to be a part of pushing that thing out there. It was called You Lead, How Being Yourself Makes You a Better Leader. Mm-hmm. That came out this last year in 2021. We showcased it at Bookstar PR.
Yep.
You know, also Mentor's been blogging since 2006. I think he invented blogging.
Yes.
no such thing. No such thing.
Yeah, it's possible. You should just say it and people will believe it in our audience.
That's right.
He's the host of his own podcast, which he does weekly called Mentor Dialogue. He's been doing that for, I don't know, 11 years, 12 years, something like that now.
My 12th now.
Gosh, that's awesome. And listen, if you want to get him going, Brant, talk to him about The Grateful Dead or paddle tennis.
Listen.
Or his love of generating meaningful conversations.
He has brought us to the world of paddle tennis. We're going to have a Thoughts That Rock team here
just
soon.
On that. Yes.
Just
that would be so awesome. Actually, for people that don't know, I know we've talked about this in the past separately. What is paddle tennis?
All right. First of all, it's pronounced by that.
Right.
So sorry. It helps if you have a little bit of tequila nearby or sangria.
Yeah. Okay? Or you're from Europe.
You got to channel your Spanishness.
Pardel.
Okay? El
pardel.
Because there are two other forms of paddle tennis. Yes. Spelled PADDLE.
Yes.
This is PADEL. And el pardel. Is similar, if you will, to platform paddle tennis, which is played in Northeast or California paddle, which is basically a mini tennis where you just have a net. Padel is really a game that you can play as a three-year-old through to an 80-year-old. And somehow I associate it with playing with a smile. Because unlike tennis, which is a real grunt, squash, which is a real killer, for your heart and your knees.
Yep.
Padel, there's something fun about the fact that you don't know how the ball's going to bounce all the time. So the unpredictability brings humility. Hmm. And you play as pairs, doubles, all the time. And it's really easy to start to play. It's quite hard to play well because it's so easy to keep the ball in play. So the issue then becomes how not to make a mistake and try to find a way to win a point because you just get all the balls back.
Yeah.
So literally there was just in a tournament in Mexico, a point that lasted over 7 minutes.
Oh wow.
And it wasn't like they were just powder puffing, you know, here you go. Oh, I'm going to send it to you. Nuh-uh. Yeah. It was going at it, wanting to, these are four professionals. Anyway, that gives you an idea of the challenge of the game. It's a lot of fun. It's beginning to appear in the United States, but of course, in the United States, you got to do things differently. So you got your pickleball, you got your platform paddle, and those are all fun. But el padel is the fastest growing sport in the world.
Whoa.
Looking to get it into the Olympics. It's generally best played in Spain, Argentina, Mexico, but it's blowing up in Sweden.
Wow.
It's huge in Italy. And if ever want to travel to Europe, go and find a padel court, sign up. If you like sports, it is just shit fun. I mean, I play 2 hours. I burn 1,500 calories. I'm 57, so that's a lot. I get my heart beat up to 160. Wow. And it's fun. There you go. That's an incitement.
Well, we'll put a link in the show notes, but because this is an audio podcast, you can't just jump onto a tennis court, right? I mean, give them a visual real quick, isn't it? Where you've got to have four walls. It's enclosed.
So there, right? Yeah, it's closed, four walls, net in the middle. Every ball has to hit the ground to be in, but you can play it off the wall. So wall,
how fun.
So floor, wall, bounce, hit.
That's awesome.
And you can also, of course, take it on the volley. But the fact is, it's not just walls. There's actually netting, which means that the ball bounces weirdly off the netting. That was the unpredictability that I was talking about. The size of the court, you can fit 2.5 padel courts in a tennis court. So if you're like having a home and you're thinking of getting a tennis court, but it's going to be crush, go paddle because you can still have a garden beside it.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
And you can play it from 3 to 80, whereas lawn tennis, it's a big court when you get to 80 years old. I mean, that is, you know, it's not happening.
How fun.
Listen, and as a 3-year-old, it's huge.
Any sport that I can rifle shots towards Jim's head, I'm in.
Right? Yeah, depends if he's on your team or not, right?
Well, it doesn't matter. If he's behind me, it'll find its way to the back of my head.
As long as I'm towards the back, that's right.
Well, he's got that hair protection. He's got that helmet.
Right, that's right. That's right.
The padel ball that actually stick in there. Listen, you guys are burning 1,000 calories. I just ate 1,000 at lunch, which is why I probably need to take up
sport. It's okay. I just drank 1,000.
Yes. We've all got our demons.
That's right.
Well, this is not an episode about padel tennis, but it could be. Like you said, Brant, we should probably just do one on the side. As you know, Mentor, you've listened to a couple of these episodes before. You know, we're not going to do the traditional long interview style. We love to get right to the heart of the leadership, you know, context, the advice, the thought that you have. Our audience just craves that type of stuff. So we're just going to leave the floor open to you. And, you know, we'd love to hear what is your thought that rocks.
Thoughts that rock, number one.
You are going to grow from this experience.
Now, well, I'm going to just flat out say that Mentor's one of the best storytellers we know. So I am dying to
hear. There has to be a story.
I am dying to hear where this story comes from. Where did this thought come from?
Wouldn't it be awesome if we just rolled credits and that was it? We just gave you the thought with no context.
You're going to grow up with this experience.
And this is it.
Now, of course, he's
what
got
the f- So first of all, I expectations about being a storyteller. I start sweating my palms. Maybe I need to drink more of my whiskey. Woodford Reserve to the rescue.
Nice.
So this is what happened. I was working at L'Oréal, the cosmetics company headquartered in France. I was working in France and I was on the development team of a brand called Kérastase, which is a high-end hair care brand. I mean, the shampoos cost over $50 for 250 milliliters. And and that was launching a new product, and I had to present it to the CEO. So you go to Clichy, which is the headquarters, which is already a taxi ride, and you're bringing all these materials, and you're thinking about every possible question that they could possibly answer because you have to know it all.
Yep.
That's what you're paid to do. You have to know it all, and plus you have to deliver it with sheen, brilliance, and wow people in a very short period of time. So you go into this, you're waiting outside, and then they say, oh, it's your turn. And then you come in to what's called the confrontation room, la salle de la confrontation.
Dun, dun,
this is all,
dun.
This is all being in French.
Yeah.
So you get wheeled in. They actually walk in, okay? But you walk in, and there's basically an amphitheater where there's this huge, really imposing wooden round table with a small slit in the middle. You walk through that, and then you go down two steps, and then you're in the middle, in the pit, and surrounded by about, I'd say, 40 chairs, where leather chairs, of course, at the center of which is the CEO, surrounded by number two, number three, and then everybody has a specific assigned seat, and there's a light shines on you, and then there you are to wow. You have a screen that projects, and you have 5 minutes to wow the entire room. And there's basically a thumbs down, thumbs up approach to this.
Gosh.
Well,
it's the Coliseum.
Oh, totally. And by the way, behind the row of people in the leather chairs, you've got another set of rows of the minions of the, the number twos and threes of each of the people at the table.
Yeah.
And so it's a big packed room. It's hot. It's dark. And there you're presenting your thing. And I come in first time. And I completely blew it. Mm-hmm. I couldn't remember my name. I mean, gosh. I was so stuck in the moment, transfixed with fear. And nothing to do with my inability to speak naturally or even to speak French. I just I lost the plot.
Yeah.
So my boss had to step in and she sort of quickly, you know, shoved me aside and said the thing, and I went out and guess how I felt?
Yeah. Not great.
No, not great. We in England, we like to understate.
Yes.
There are other terms we could use.
Yes.
And I am inconsolably horribly, just this is it.
You know, mortified. Yeah.
Some moment as a break, and one of the members of the team who works in this division, the hairdresser division, he's a rugby man from the south of France. And I always had an affection for him. He was always very soulful, hard ass and part of the culture. But he comes over to me and he's a little bit taller and certainly a lot rounder. And his name was Jacques. And he says, Minter, I have faith in you. I trust you will succeed. You will grow from this experience. And it was a magnanimous thing to do because everybody else thought I was a pariah at that point, untouchable, you know, a waste, your history. And that's how I felt for sure. And that act of generosity, first of all, was beautiful. Mm. You don't need to kick somebody who's down.
Yeah.
And so that was one point. And then the other point, of course, is that really life is all about dealing with shit. Mm-hmm. That actually is what is life, characterizes it.
Sure.
And it's how you deal with those moments. And so within life, there are experiences. So as much as you guys, it's horrible, we're all authors, writing books, you can learn so much from books. Actually, you learn most from experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you learn awfully a lot, if you're open to it, from your failures.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not fun to do it. It's not like you want to fail.
Yeah.
But it turns out that it's in those moments, maybe unexpectedly, that you have to then find the resilience, the reserve within you to go back and say, all right, I can f-ing do this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I go from this numbed, catastrophic experience of speaking to turning into a speaker. So if only I could say, hey, Jacques, merci.
Yeah,
he really, that was, his words forever stayed with me. And I think that is what we can do when we see somebody else, how we can pick them up is to go over and be generous enough to show support even when the chips are down. And then also just to think that it's when those chips are down that the learning goes up.
Yep. So it's funny that you say that because, you know, I guess my first question would have been, how did that affect your life? But you're sort of saying it right now. You're already answering it, that you probably have more awareness that when this happens to other people, you can be their Jacques, right? You can be the consoler, the elevator, if I can use your own word. You can throw your arms around them and go, don't worry about it. This too shall pass. You'll learn from it. You'll grow from it. You know, we've sort of jokingly shared, you know, you look at life like Shrek. You know, like ogres are like onions, right? It's like layers. And I've used this terminology of you can either look at things as them happening to you or for you. And probably the first time you get whacked about the face, if I was ever in the confrontation room, I probably would lose it as well. But if you're open to saying, this moment right now sucks, but I'm going to get better, I'm going to learn from it, then you start to look at things as happening for you and you become happier, healthier, more productive. You become an impact and influence for other people. So you sort of already answered, you know, my question, how did that affect your life? But, you know, I don't know, maybe this would be the question. How have you used that in a speaker role now remembering what that experience was like?
Yeah. Well, I want to add one more thing, Jim, which is that cultures of, I would say, toxic fear and control, I don't think they're necessary. Mm-hmm. I also kept that thought, even though that's in the organization that was the overriding culture at the time. It apparently has changed since, which is great news. But while I was working there, that was the reigning culture. And it really, I wanted to have empathy for other people who were going through the same type of fear. And so I kept that experience throughout my work experience too. How do you create a culture that has demands, has exigencies, but is also humane at some level? And of course, Jacques was part of the same culture. So it exists within the culture. Mm-hmm. But you need to have it. And also the other thing I want to throw out was is that he was a rugby player. Mm-hmm. And certain cultures, certain communities, I feel, have better values than others. Mm-hmm. Certain sports promote a different type of vibe.
Yep.
And rugger has always been one of my top ones. As far as speaking is concerned, well, amongst other things, the key is to practice. In the situation that I was in, it was so much to learn. I could only do one run through, by which I mean I had to remember everything. And if I had any spare time, I had to remember more things. Mm-hmm. It was more is more.
Yep.
About everything. As opposed to focus on what you have to say and just hammer that, practice it until you're sweet and spot.
Yeah.
So the issue was the inexhaustible amount of stuff that I had to remember. And that's what actually blacked my mind out. So when you are in a speaking mode, yeah, I have lots of experiences. I have probably lots of stories, and I don't remember every story perfectly at the moment when I want to say it in the speech. But I have a great idea of the arc. I know, yeah. I know my pieces. I have the three talking points that are going through it.
Yep.
And I'm now so solid in my material.
Yeah.
And also practiced in the art of trying to avoid non-words and using the floor and changing the rhythms and
yeah.
The skill of speaking. I've practiced it. So I now feel, well, maybe it woke me up anyway, I suppose. Yeah. Yeah. To the real need to know your topic and practice.
So real quick, first off, I think you are a lot like that because as long as you get the main story arc and the bullet points, you can talk around it. I am very different. I have to be detailed and I'm hyper aware, probably to a fault in so many things, whether it's animation, bullet point, image, what I'm about to say, what people are doing, what the temperature of the room, like I'm all about that. And I'm not saying I couldn't move and spin on a dime if something needed to happen. I've got that pre-planned in my head, knowing that I can still be nimble and flexible to adjust if I need to. But I did want to say one thing, and then I'll turn it over to Brant. It's funny that you say that because I talk about culture. Obviously, you know, I work for one of the greatest cultural brands out there, Hard Rock International. I did that for 2 decades. I wrote a book about culture. So I'm with you. I was asking the question, I think, not just our own skill set, but I'm more aware the more businesses, brands that I'm in front of, that there still permeates throughout some of these that same leadership style that you talked about. They still manage through threats and punishment and fear, and you will do this or else. And it blows my mind because I think today's workforce will laugh at that and just go, screw you, and they'll just go somewhere else because they can, because pretty much anybody can get a job almost anywhere now. I say that loosely, but it is a little bit more of an employee's world right now. It does blow my mind, Mentor, that there are still companies that do that. Maybe even a couple industries, like you said, that sort of exists. Unless you're making a ton of money, I don't see how people can take it, because if you were going to treat me If there was such a thing as a confrontation room and I was going to be beaten about the face in presenting an idea, I'm not so sure I'd be able to work in that culture. So it blows my mind. Brant, you've failed a lot. Where would you take it from here? Oh, I'm sorry. That was a weird transition. Yes.
Too easy. A couple of things. So the idea of a confrontation room, I just love it. I love it on so many levels, but I do also believe that it's different in Europe than it is here in the States. I think at least, you know, I wish I could remember the name of this company, but there was a company over there that did strategic planning, and their philosophy was all of the strategic planning should come basically from confrontation, right? Is that that's when you, when there's confrontation, you have truth that is coming from both sides, deeply held beliefs from both sides. And that's where the strategy comes in. And if you don't have confrontation, is it really strategy? And so it was an interesting, spin, but they didn't look at confrontation as a negative thing at all. It was just sort of an expected thing that was needed to get to where you needed to go. And so because of the way it was positioned, we didn't, you know, here, I don't want confrontation because somebody wins and somebody loses.
Yeah.
There, it's like it's the necessary step to get to that strategic outcome. So I found that very interesting. I think on a couple of fronts, on the speaking side, Minter, you and I are you know, brothers on that side of just, I go into it with a good friend of ours, Tamsin Webster, wrote a book called Find Your Red Thread, and she teaches this process of delivering a message through what she describes and has created, which is her red thread, which is basically five steps, that it doesn't matter if you know word for word what it is that you want to say, as long as you know where you are in this process of what step you're on. You can talk all you want about that particular step, and if lights go down, power goes out, Wi-Fi stops, whatever, it doesn't matter. If you lose everything, you can still conduct yourself in a way that you're still an expert and you're still having a powerful way to connect with somebody. And so, you know, I approach every talk that way. You know, a lot of my talks have parts of them that are similar no matter what I'm talking about. But no two talks are exactly the same. And that's by design for me, because I want to leave enough space to capture the truth in the room, which is something that I think is crucial for great speakers, not any speaker, but great speakers leave enough space to capture the truth in the room.
Thank you.
Yes, Jim. If you don't, then it's canned. It's not real. It's not authentic. You can feel it. You can taste it sometimes. It's just not good.
Yeah.
There are a ton of great presenters in the world. There are very few great speakers, in my opinion, anyways. And that's because most of them are too scared to let something happen in the room. And I want something to happen in the room, because that's what they're going to remember. That lightning in a bottle of that moment, that thing that happened that was unexpected, is what is the first thing that comes to mind from everybody when they leave. It's the one thing they're going to tell everybody about the entire talk. Mm-hmm. And so I have to have enough interaction with the crowd and leave enough space to have that holy shit moment where you don't quite know what is going to happen or what's going to happen next. It's what keeps me wanting to do that. So on one side, that was that. On the other side, I just wanted to talk for a second. The thing that I love about this story, Minter, is that I break it into two parts here. When you sort of explain this scenario of you were put in this position to really shine, you shit the bed and knew it. And it was like, oh gosh, I don't, you know, so here's Jacques, who's this guy you respect, you know, comes from rugby, comes from the rough and tough, right? Sort of world. And what I love about it is the first thing he did was say, I have faith in you. Mm-hmm. Before he talked about what you just did, he said, I have faith in you. And that to me is so important to break those things apart, right? It's one thing to talk about what just happened and that you're going to grow from this experience. It's another thing to, before that even happens, for him to say, I have faith in you. I believe in you. That to me is like when you hear people talk about giving an apology. Mm-hmm. And if it's anything other than I'm sorry, it's not an apology.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. In that same light, it would have been so easy for him to go to that learning moment so quickly and just jump on what didn't happen or what you did wrong and start to teach. But instead he just makes it about you and says, I don't care. You know, I know what just happened there. That's fine. But I believe in you first and foremost. And then to say you'll grow from this experience, it has so much more weight when you know that all he really cares about is you. Right. I mean, that was the first thing that happened, was it wasn't about the moment. He separated the moment from the man. And that to me is, it says everything about a great leader.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Well, I do hope that Shaq gets a chance to hear this call. It's been a few years. I wanted to bounce back on this idea of conflict or this confrontation. I'm in the process of conjuring up my next book. And I feel that we've gotten into a situation where not only do we not want conflict, we're afraid of other opinions because, mm-hmm. you know, you go too far out and you say the wrong word and people react mm-hmm. to that word. And, you know, so we can't even say what we want to say. So let's call it, in my language, perhaps not politically correct, but too much political correctness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's political incorrectness somehow we need to re-inject into our conversations and as you say, strategy is about choice. Mm-hmm. You can't have everything. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to find a method to come to terms on what we have. And in organizations, you have to have tension because that's where the CFO exists, to say, we don't have budget for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so whether it's time or clients or whomever, you have to make choices. And so where do you have that forum to openly discuss? And there's nothing worse than the yes manning, yes sir, yes man, in a business where you're not giving open forum. And so one of the things that I'm interested in doing is re-inviting people to have meaningful conversations where we can politely or civilly anyway disagree.
Yeah.
And rather than get twisted up in our, you know, maybe emotional bent, mm-hmm. present things in a way doesn't have to be rude to you, but this, mm-hmm. I politely disagree with you and this, and I can present some ideas and some facts, of course, too. Some stories, by the way, mm-hmm. always good.
Yeah.
And do it in a way where it's not a personal affront. We've lost our ability to do that in society. And it's all about me. We're so afraid of death that we put aside all the messiness of life, and it's just got to be do, and we forget to be.
Yeah.
And so I feel like we need to find a way for us to allow for us to have good confrontation. Because mm-hmm. as you say, Brent, that's absolutely true. And I want to finish on another anecdote, which is something that unites us all, and that's music. So we've been talking about speaking, but I counted roughly 800, maybe 900 concerts in my life.
Wow.
I played in maybe 50, but nothing great. You know, just seeing little things, nothing like you guys. And I went to see, as you know, the Grateful, very Grateful Dead, a few hundred times. And the thing about them is that they never did one show the same way. So you go see the Rolling Stones two nights in a row. That's a mistake because Jagger runs down the left alleyway to the end. He skates to the end. He brings his microphone wire around and he, you know, start me up, you know, and there he goes. And the next night does exactly the same thing. The lighting's tracking him over. Yes. I mean, I exaggerate a little bit, but that's basically what happens.
Yeah.
Whereas with the Dead, he didn't know what next note was coming.
That's
much
right.
less next
that's
song.
Right.
That's and right. what was the experience you're having? And so I think that we need to know that life is an experience. It's a one time around. It's not a dress rehearsal. And that's what we need to be living up like. And so when you introduce Brandt into your speaking, the idea of the air or the silence or the mistake, well, that is life, actually. Yeah. And allowing you to have that interactivity.
Yeah.
First of all, it keeps you excited because you don't bore yourself.
That's
you tell
right.
the story another way.
That's right.
Just because you want to try that rabbit hole, why not? And then everyone else is like, ooh,
yeah,
what's going to happen next?
Yeah.
Da na 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 na.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Listen, I think it actually leads perfectly into our next thought that we were going to share with you that sort of follows along that same thought path. It's from Zig Ziglar. And our thought this week is this.
Thoughts that rock, number two.
If you're not willing to learn, no one can help you. But if you're determined to learn, no one can stop you. And I think that that's really what this is about, is that Back to what you were just saying, Mentor, I think we've got ourselves into this scenario as a society where the differing opinions has stopped us from being willing to learn. Like, we think we've got it figured out and we don't want to listen to the other side because they're wrong. Being able to have a conversation of differing opinions with civility is the only way to get to some sort of a resolution where everybody can live with and support the decision, as opposed to you win, you lose, either you get on board or get off the train. And that's sort of the experience that I think it's gotten worse and worse and worse over the last few years. But this idea that we can differ, this idea that if we just came to the table with this willingness to learn, and at least try to understand where someone else is coming from, how is that a bad, I don't see any way that you can position that as a bad thing. If we take wins and losses off the table and just make it about understanding, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I think that that's just such a much better way to approach everything in this day and age where we are so afraid to say the wrong thing, or we're so afraid to offend someone, or we're so afraid to stand up for what we believe in because we're going to get centered or categorized over here. And then everyone's going to think of you in this particular light, like you can't change your mind, or like you can't, you know what I mean? There's no evolution at all. And that to me is such a sad state, because if we're not evolving, what are we doing? I think that, at least for me, it's my goal to continually evolve, to continually learn and discover what the other side feels and thinks, so that you're not just shoving your opinion down someone's throat. Like, you know, it's been sort of that way with religion for years. No matter what you choose to believe, there's always a segment of every religion that wants to shove it down your throat. And whether you like it or not, this is the way it is. It never goes well. No one ever goes, oh, thank you for shoving that down my throat and making me choke on it, because now I believe what you believe. I don't know that that has ever happened. But if you just went into having discussions with people with the thought process of, I just want to learn where you're coming from. That's it. I just want to learn where you're coming from. I'm not saying that I'm going to agree with you. I'm not saying that you have to agree with me. I just want to understand. Have you found that sort of approach is something that you've leaned into through your incredible career that you've had thus far?
You've got questions, we've got answers. Business leadership, ownership, and sales can be challenging. Tune into the Accelerate Your Business Growth podcast to learn from the world's experts. Join me, your host, Diane Helbig, as I chat with people who have expertise in various areas of business. You'll enjoy the lively conversations that are focused on providing you with the ideas, tips, and suggestions you need to realize greater success. Get what you need for your business when you need it from the people who have the answers. Accelerate Your Business Growth is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and is available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
I love that whole layup. And it certainly goes back to what Jim was talking about with culture still being poor. So I just did an empathy circle. I host it with four other people. And the process is active listening in front of other people mutually.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And so the thing I want to point out right now is ego. Mm. Because you can be open to listening, but are you open to changing your opinion? Are you open to listening to the other person's real perspectives, not just their feelings and thoughts?
Yeah.
And how far ego gets in the way. And within that, how open are you actually to understanding yourself, including all your warts, your failings, mm-hmm. you know, things in the cupboard or the closet that are part of chips and shoulders and come out under tension.
Yep.
And so there's a place for ego, which we all need to have ego. We all have ego, mm-hmm. but knowing how to put it aside and then becoming in touch and aware of who you are as an individual.
Yep.
And once you have that, there's a better chance that when you listen to somebody, it's not going to be about you, because your ego is put aside. Yep. You can then focus on the other person, not the zit on the end of my nose or right. whatever the other imperfection right. I have that are going on.
Right. Right. I love that. I think that as I'm listening and sort of to what we've both just said, I think the word change is why people have a hang up. Like changing is, it's a win or lose situation. And if are you willing to change, doesn't mean change to my side, but at least be willing to me to evolve, right? So even if it's, you still end up feeling the same way and you still believe what you're going to believe, are you open to allowing yourself to evolve a little bit in understanding what's happening here and where this conflict might be coming from, and that is it's I don't know, we don't approach it that way. I think we approach it as it's tug of war. You're over there, I'm over here. We're both going to pull as hard as we can, and hopefully one of us is stronger than the other or is smarter than the other and can get them to the other side. But we never really take that moment to just figure out, why are we holding the rope?
We're very transactional.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to tell you about the experience I just had. It was with four wonderful people who never met each other. And what I do is I ask them to speak to one another in 5-minute bursts. And the other person can only reformulate. And here's the key: without judgment. And so for 2 hours solid, you speak for maybe 2 times 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But for the rest of the time, you're listening. Mm-hmm. Would you characterize that as a tiring or an energizing idea of just listening to somebody for sure. 2 hours?
Completely tiring.
Yeah.
I would think it's completely tiring.
Most people would. Yeah.
Well, it was super hyper energizing.
Wow.
Here's why. First of all, they all realized how shit they are at listening in the first place, but they actually don't listen. Yeah. These are all very successful individuals.
Yeah. Yeah.
Secondly, we connected at a level that we just don't do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
It was the most humane. What they said at the end, it says, thank you. Well, one of the women said, thank you for inviting me to be able to feel heard. Thank you for being able to hear what you guys said. And thank you for allowing us to live this moment.
Yeah. Mm. Yep. I love it.
Yeah. You know why that is? I think about this all the time, is because no one is taught listening. You think about the other forms of communication. We're all taught grammar and writing. We're all taught some sort of speech, maybe a little bit in high school, certainly when you get to college. Certainly we do that for a living. There's no listening classes. And so you have to go out of your way to take a Mentor Dial course, or in my case, a Franklin Covey course. You know, when you get to a moment like this where you can pull people, you extrapolate them out of the day-to-day life, you put them in an environment where you're going to do an exercise like that, or I used to use improv acting exercises, because you always wonder how these people can be so quick. It's because they practice like crazy listening skills. It goes back to what you're saying, Brant. You have a layout and a plan, but you're able to spin on a dime and go in a different direction. And people that are super aware of their listening skills actually become way more productive, not just as a listener, but being able to impact and influence other people. And then the other person, of course, you know, feels seen. But it's funny, because I'm taking both the quote that you had, Mentor, but also taking this one from Zig Ziglar, and you think about these two together and go, for the last 10, maybe 15 years, people have been boxed in. They've got tons of emotions. Everybody is taken aside. It seems like there's no more middle ground. You almost need to have a conference, a podcast, a platform, like you're saying. What if you came into it with an open mind? And I say this quite a bit on the show, that you'd be willing to have your mind change.
Yep.
I think a confrontation room, a conflict exercise would be great. But even you and I, you know, you're probably more emotional about stuff. You probably do try and ram stuff down my throat. Like, I get that.
A little bit.
But I do think that if people were a little bit more aware, we'd be in a different place. But unfortunately, what you guys are talking about sometimes is nirvana. And I agree with you 100%. I just think, man, it will take
a lot of pulling people into a room, get them out of their day-to-day to ultimately work on that behavior change. Because it's not just in the U.S. It's the whole world right now has just put themselves in this box. And if you're not willing to learn, or as Zig Ziglar said, not determined to, you know, to look at it as a great exercise, or like you said, to learn from the experience, they're just going to shut down, and now all of a sudden you just constantly have conflict, and that gets people nowhere.
I think it comes back to what Mentor just explained in this empathy circle is, you know, when we would do stuff with banding people together, Mentor, I used to work with this group that was just awesome. They taught people how to collaborate. And so they use music to do their teaching. And so we would explain sort of the art of collaboration, what's involved with collaboration, the difference between cooperation and collaboration. And then we would break them into groups, send them off into their own little bands, if you will. And then they would write these original songs together using what they learned in this class about collaborating. And we'd take this back to our studios and we'd record the songs like professionally, like you'd hear on the radio, and send them back. And then every group, every band within the company had this song that they did themselves, wrote themselves, and they had something that they could be proud of and have fun with. And, you know, one of the exercises that we would do each time was called the trust exercise. And it wasn't trust falls and, you know, having people fall off of the table into your arms. It was, we would break people into, say, groups of 5 to 7, and they would have to share a memory of a moment when music impacted them the most. And so you would sit in this circle, and there you might be in a circle with somebody that at work you just want to punch them in the face. Like you have this just disdain for this person.
And I get it.
They're in this very small circle together. And then they tell this story of how, you know, they were listening to this song on the car radio when they got the call that their mother died. Mm-hmm. And they can't ever listen to this song the same way again. And all of a sudden, everybody else in that circle, the shoulders fall. And it's this, maybe that's why they're like, you know, they are the way they
right.
are. They've experienced this trauma in some way, shape, or form that has made them who they are. But that understanding, that willingness, first of all, to be vulnerable and share, and second of all, to take that to heart and go, you know, that happened to me. That you started to find these points of connection that didn't exist before they were willing to share. Oh, that's my favorite song. Oh, that's my favorite band. Oh my gosh, they were the first people I ever saw in concert. You start to experience these connections with music, which for whatever reason, as confrontational as music can be at times, it's also like the uniter. So it was great to have like this harmless way to connect, but share these deep, full, meaningful moments that allowed yourself to open up and maybe hear from someone later in the day. And it just created a stronger bond, I think, between the people in those circles. And that's what I think, Mentor, you're talking about, where when you active listen, when you are willing to sort of gather some of that information, it gives you an opportunity to change because now you have more information from which to make your decision.
Well, music is a great uniter. It's a great stimulator. It's something basically everybody has a story, just like everybody knows a little bit about education.
Yeah.
And I think that for me, the takeaway in general is our need to be able to also listen to what's not said, to observe the nonverbal communication,
yeah,
and especially to tap into the emotions.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to hear cognitively the words coming out of my mouth. It's another thing to put the context around them and understand the failing voice, the quivering confidence,
yeah,
mm-hmm, and such underneath it. And that actually probably, as my wonderful friend Alessandro said, is 90% of success in management. You're gonna like this. I think this is a thing that captures hopefully everything in its best way. Here we go, share.
That's how the Grateful Dead evolved as they did, was because everybody listened really hard to each other. That's the only way it can happen. You have to listen. You have to listen.
I love that.
Truth.
Isn't that apropos? And why it was so true for the Dead is that they had seven members of the band, who each came from a different musical background. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't just say, hey, let's put down a 4-4 riff or whatever. Yeah. There was no common language at that level. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you just had to figure out what language they were speaking and where they wanted to go. And if you're in your own ego world, you weren't open to where they wanted to go next.
Yep.
And of course they brought in the John Coltrane idea of allowing people to do leads together. And it wasn't just about me and my show and my big, furry chest.
Yeah. Well, if you listen to what Phil was saying there is you just have to listen. I would even say it really goes to what both of you are saying. You also have to feel, and I think if you can be so in tune with the other person to the extent that you can listen to them, repeat back to them exactly what they were intending, that they feel understood before you can make your next point.
Yeah.
Is that going to take longer? Is that a pain in the butt? Absolutely. But you're going to get to the end zone a lot better. It reminds me of jazz music. If you're a fan of that, it amazes me that, like the Grateful Dead, these songs in a jazz group, a quartet, quintet could go 15 minutes. And at the exact moment, the rest of the band knows when to lay out and let the drummer do the drum solo or the bass player take a solo or whoever and when to come back in. They're not looking at each other. They feel it. They're listening. They're totally in tune. I just think if the human mindset were to move to something like that, we'd be in a much better place. But unfortunately, we boxed ourselves in. For a variety of reasons. I mean, Jim Sullivan is a restaurant consultant. He's probably one of our big ones in the food and beverage world. And he says, school is never out for the professional student. If you're willing to constantly learn and be open-minded in whatever way, books, podcasts, conferences, listening to other people, one-on-one conversations, you're going to be well-served. And I'll say this, and then I'll throw it over to Brent, and he closes out here. I just, when I was looking at, again, both your quote, when I look at what you were talking about, mentor, from your experience with Jacques, and this Zig Ziglar quote, it reminds me again of my dad. My one big failing, well, I have many failings, but my one big one is that I have no technical skills of any way, shape, or form.
What?
Lighting, carpentry, technology, you name it. And I clearly remember.
Email, recording, yes. Podcasting,
yeah. Washing dishes.
Yes. None of those. I will hire anybody. But, I can remember, and I bet you guys did as well, my father on many occasions took me outside to go work on the car at night with the holding the flashlight so he could get the work done. Mosquitoes are eating me, and I'm in Central Florida, so it's hot as all get out. He's trying to teach me so hard to do anything, change a battery, work on a belt that's in there, change the carburetor, change the oil, whatever it is. And he pretty much gave me the mentor dial, like, you're going to learn from this. You're going to grow from this. But to the Zig Ziglar quote, I wasn't willing to learn. Mine was all behavioral-based stuff. I'm like, thank goodness that I've got other soft skills that I can help people with. I might feel like I've got more experience in that world, but technical skills, I have none because I wasn't willing to learn. And I think, and I'm trying to use that as an analogy, I think if people were just more willing to be okay with confrontation, mm-hmm. to have conversation, I'd love to have a podcast, like you said, mentor, to just debate and talk about stuff. But once it gets too emotional where people are yelling at each other, cussing at each other, screaming, no, it's my way or the highway, then what you've done is you've now just, you've put a little bit of a chink in the armor in the relationship. So I wish something like that existed. I hope you create something like that, mentor, because boy, do we need that very cool, calm, collected Discord more than ever to get to the promised land, I think.
Well, I've got a Substack that I'll be launching on this topic. And it's going to be called Minter Dialogos. The logos.
Not sure
the
what
meaning,
that means.
The meaning.
Nice.
I love it. Well, that's a perfect segue as to how can people connect with you? What's the best way for them to take this conversation to that next level?
Well, I suppose I'm still a slave to Twitter at MDIAL. Otherwise, I blog on MinterDial.com, and my podcast is not so hard either. It's Minter Dialogue for those who parle français. I have a French one as well, and otherwise that comes out once a week. My podcast, which you can find on my site, and I've got a few books available on all good e-bookstores, including bookshop.org. Thanks again, Brant and Jim, for having me on your show. It's a pleasure to hang with you guys.
And pleasure's all ours. And now I'm going to have to go check out padel tennis.
Yes,
for sure.
Yes.
And
I can send you an article I wrote on it. So
yeah.
Show notes too.
We totally will do that. Yeah. Fantastic. Honestly, this was such a great great get for us to have you on the show. And I know, again, we had a little bit of fun for the 3-4 months that we were working on helping you push your book out there.
You guys were awesome.
Well, thank you for saying that. Your book is awesome. I mean, honestly, that's
our job easy.
Yeah. We don't have to pull smoke and mirrors over people. They see the title, they see the book, and they go, yeah, that's going to be for me. And
yeah,
people have really responded well. So
yep,
you're awesome, man. You're a complete and total book star.
Thanks, brother.
Appreciate you.
We'll talk to you soon. Rock on.
Hey, rock stars, thanks so much for tuning in. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe so you don't ever miss an episode.
Yeah, and if you're interested in having Brant or me or both of us speak at your event, whether as a webinar for a virtual event or in person as a conference keynote, contact us directly at thoughtsthatrock.com.
Until next time,
rock on!
Welcome, change agents, to your go-to place for stories that ignite your spirit, fuel your purpose, and connect us all. We believe in the incredible power of the human spirit, its boundless resilience, and the inspiration it brings to our lives. On the Driving Change podcast, we'll journey together through the extraordinary yet very relatable experiences of some of the most amazing people on earth. Our mission? That through these stories, we might just spark change within you and awaken a newfound motivation to harness your unique gifts to make a real difference in the world. So get ready to be inspired and join us on this incredible adventure. You can find the Driving Change podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you love listening to your favorite podcasts.